Ready or not, here I come, right? The main ideas that I would like to think with you about this morning are the two parallel truths of the scripture. Now, there's more than two, right? But these sort of the basic ones is that God created the world. This did not happen by chance. It's not random. God created the world, and we must accept the world that we have. It's a lifelong discipline. And parallel to that is another thing, is that each of us must take responsibility to create the world that we live in. We were created to be like God. God is creative. He made a world, and he expects you to make a world too. There is such a thing as objective reality. I don't believe that it's just, well, if it's true for you, that's good enough. There are things that are real. God has created the world. But each of us create the world that we live in. And the stories this morning, you know, in knitting, I drop stitches, and in life, I drop numbers. So for some reason, we've dropped out the second half of the text, which is the second story, and I'll read that when we get to that. But I would like to think with you, and if any of you want to talk back to me or you want to say something, I hope that you will do so. I feel like there's going to be somebody here that has something to say about the idea that God created the world and that you create your own world. Because, you know, we do meet people who live in a world where they don't trust anybody, and you say, well, that's true. In the end, even the people that you love and that you know or love you, they're not, in the very end, they don't always come through to you. So I can't argue with you, but you live in a world where people are untrustworthy because that's the world that you've created for yourself. So I want to think about those two worlds. As God created the world, so we create our world, our particular body, our particular parents, our birth, where we've lived geographically, the people that have been out around us. Is this too loud? It feels real loud in my ear. That is what God has created. Oh, now he's turned it down for me. Don't bother with me. Just do whatever the people say. That God has created those things. We didn't make up the particular things. But our own history of thinking about the people we've met, thinking about the experiences that we've had, and how we interact with it, that's the world that we create. We live in our own world of what we believe about things. Our perception of the spiritual world, whether there's a loving, trusting God, how trustworthy are my own thoughts and my own feelings? Can I trust my judgment about things? When it's safe to trust other people, and how deeply I get involved with groups of people and with friends and things like that. What to do with mistakes, what to do with malice, what to do with misunderstanding and limitations as they arise in other people and in myself. That's what I create. I create a world of how I deal with those things. We know that God is guiding us, the scriptures tell us, and that God has a plan for us and for the world. And also from the scriptures, we know that we choose our own way. In a positive way, building and creating with all the resources God has given us. And in a negative way, we carry around so much baggage, blocking and denying and fighting and fearful to use positively all that we have been given, the good and the bad experiences and our own resources. The first story, which is the only story so far, boldly looks at how Jesus had a life that was planned by God, and he also learned and grew as a man. Oh, we start getting a little bit nervous. Eloise is always not afraid. She's never afraid to say it, right? She said it, that Jesus didn't understand and that he grew. And many commentators say that, and other ones are like, we're not going to say that. But it seems, we know from Luke, it says that Jesus grew in knowledge and in favor with God and man. So we know that as a human being, he did grow. That's in Luke. Right. And as an adult, his understanding of his calling seems to be growing as well. And in the second story, which we'll read after this, there was a man who was brought to him. That's a little bit odd, and you're like, because he uses spit to heal. As a mother, you fix your child. Yeah. Spit is a traditional healing tool, but we're like, and he pokes his fingers in the man's ears, and he touches his tongue. So both of these stories are wonderful. Oh, wow. But we're like, we're a little bit uneasy with both of them. These stories, are they not an opportunity for you and for me to take a few more steps toward freedom and joy? On one hand, accepting our God-given purposes. And on the other hand, embracing our bodies and our identity and our community and our circumstances to create a world where we can fully trust God and ourselves. There never will come a time when we get beyond having to receive God's will for ourselves and also taking responsibility for making the world that we live in. And this is true for us as individuals, and it's true for us as a community of faith or any other kind of group that you might be in. Now, in this first story, which you have heard, and which you've heard Eloise's story, so you already get it, the woman was a Greek speaker of the Phoenician race. And the Phoenicians were ancient people, and they were sailors. So the Hebrew people didn't like to go out into the ocean. It made them nervous. They were land people. So they would hire Phoenician sailers. You see that in Job and in others, in Jonas and in other stories. But they were Phoenician people of the Mediterranean. Now, researchers are divided on whether it says Syro-Phoenician, whether the Syrian part means that she was a Phoenician living in Syria rather than in Carthage, or whether she was in the northern part of Syria. They called those Syro-Phoenicians rather than another kind of Phoenicians who were in the south, or whether she had two parents from two different backgrounds. Do you care about that? If you're from a mixed background, you might care. And you might not care. The research is interesting, but it is not conclusive. So we come back to reading the text, just like anybody who reads intelligently, trying to understand it. She is a Greek-speaking Gentile. So now we know that either she or Jesus can speak Greek and Aramaic, because they were able to speak to one another.
So
you don't have to necessarily know the other person's language. My husband can talk with a Portuguese person, but he speaks Spanish. They speak Portuguese, and they can understand each other well enough to get their business done. But somehow we know that Jesus is here in a multilingual situation, and he's able to speak enough Greek, or she knew enough Aramaic, that he can communicate with somebody who is a Gentile. And wasn't Don's memorable, isn't it? A pagan woman, he says. So that, you know, Eloise's lines are always memorable, aren't they?
Watch your finger.
She had heard about Jesus healing. She had a daughter, and we don't know exactly, but from the word, they think maybe around 6 or 7, definitely not a young woman, but not a baby either. We know that her daughter was disturbed, and we know that she loved her daughter. Jesus tells her, no, it is not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. And a commentator on this passage records what a Jewish scholar writes. He said, if any other Jewish teacher had said such a thing, the Christians would never forgive Judaism for this. Unfortunately, Jesus said it, not anybody else. So we go, well, Wow, but this is hard to swallow. We know that the message of Christ was for the whole world, and this wasn't something new that started in the New Testament. We get it all the way back at the very beginning, when the promise was given to Adam and Eve that their child would crush the head of the serpent. This was for the whole world. This is before God revealed himself to Abraham. And in Isaiah, the chapters talk about the whole world in many places in the Old Testament. So we know that the message of Christ is for the whole world. And most of us are Gentiles. We know that we were received into the church. But Jesus is taking the message to the Israelite nation first. But we will learn that this woman has accepted the way the world is. She doesn't deny it. But she is also willing to create her own world. I know how it is. I'm a dog. I'm not supposed to have this. However, in my world, the dogs can eat the scraps under the table. It seems that Jesus interacted with her and as a human learned and adjusted to her wisdom. We don't have her name, but she believed. And I noticed the songs this morning. Debbie chooses songs that just really bring out the meaning of the text. But she believed that God was loving and faithful, and she was not wrong. Whether we think or know ourselves to be disqualified from God's mercy and healing because of specific things about ourselves, if we know God to be true and good, let us hold God to his loving kindness, Old Testament has said, and not drop back. Whatever you hear about Jesus, make it your own. Take it. Take it. Now let me read the second story that is in here about healing. Then Jesus left the vicinity of Tyre and went through Sidon down to the Sea of Galilee and into the region of the Decapolis. There, some people brought a man to him who was deaf and could hardly talk, and they begged him to place his hand on the man. After he took him aside, away from the crowd, Jesus put his fingers into the man's ears. Then he spit and touched the man's tongue. Jesus, he looked up to heaven and with a deep sigh said to him, Ephphatha, which means, it's Aramaic, which means be opened. At this, the man's ears were opened, his tongue was loosened, and he began to speak plainly. Jesus commanded them not to tell anyone. But the more he did so, the more they kept talking about it. People were overwhelmed with amazement. He has done everything well, he said. He even makes the deaf hear and the dumb speak. Now, the woman's daughter who's disturbed in demon possession, and there are many ways of being disturbed, and each of us have somebody in our lives, if it's not ourselves, who are disturbed. Jesus lifts that off the woman. And from there, he keeps moving. The path of Jesus back to Galilee is roundabout, and we don't know the geography there, so it doesn't make, we read it. But one commentator has said, it would be like this. From Portland, Jesus went to Denver via Seattle and the Great Plains. So if we knew better, we'd go, this doesn't sound right. Huh? Again, there are many ways to understand this. Some say that it shows that Mark was somebody who didn't know the area very well. He was like, if I was telling about Zambian geography, I would mix it up or something like that. So he was probably a Gentile and he was from a different area. But other people say no, that the people that Mark was writing to were from that area. So Mark ran them through the cities where they were living. Like, he came through my town. Like if Jesus had gone to New Jersey, I can't say Jesus came to Pennsylvania, but I say Jesus was in the tri-state area, right? So to kind of bring him in where you feel like, yeah, he came through here. He came right through near where we are. Or Jesus took, I mean, I believe that's what he did, but the way that Mark writes about it, we don't know why he wrote that way, but Jesus took a roundabout road, as we do in our lives sometimes. Whatever the path, people continued to hear about Jesus and continued to connect him to the needs of people they loved. So here's a man who cannot hear and cannot speak. The woman found Jesus on her own. She insisted. But here's somebody who's, okay, you come. You come here. I'm going to help you. Somebody is brought to Jesus. He couldn't hear about Jesus because he can't hear. We do not know, again, we read that we don't know if the man could speak or hear at some time and he lost those abilities, or whether he was born without hearing and thus he could not speak clearly. As you know, if you never hear, it's hard to speak clearly, or some combination of the above. And Jesus uses spit, a traditional healing salve, poking his fingers in the man's ears to clear a path. And most likely, there's some variations on interpreting where he spit and how he spit and where his fingers were, but probably he spit on his fingers and he touched the man's tongue to release his speech. The Aramaic word is preserved here. And the thought is that perhaps those in Mark's day who were healing used the word as, just as I say sometimes, Maranatha, which is Aramaic, to try to connect back to the powerful reality of Jesus' life. But when that man, who couldn't hear and who couldn't speak clearly, began to speak and hear, people were really astonished. What would it take to astonish you? These are wonderful stories. They give us hope. We ourselves are sometimes severely disturbed, and we also have disturbed loved ones that we can't help. We ourselves and those we love have blocked hearing and impaired speech. Could it be that the power of God could work in our lives too? Could this be? These stories are an opportunity for us to take a few more steps toward freedom and joy. On one hand, finding our God-given purpose, and parallel to that, embracing our bodies and identity and community and circumstances. Everything that you hear about Jesus is for you. Amen.